And tonight on Coast to Coast, we're going to be talking about remote viewing and the CIA. We're also going to talk about a new film called Third Eye Spies. Two special guests for you. For the first half, of course, remote viewer Russell Targ joins us. He's been with us many, many times. And then later on in the show, Lance Mungia joins us, the producer-director of the Third Eye Spies movie. That'll be all next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast for the first half of the show. Russell Targ joins us, physicist, a pioneer in the development of the laser and laser applications, co-founder of the Stanford Research Institute's investigation into psychic abilities back in the 70s and 80s. That's the real X-Files, folks. And now he dabbles in ESP research in Palo Alto, California. And here he is back on Coast to Coast, Mr. Russell Targ. Russell, always a pleasure.
I'm happy to be with you.
How have you been?
I'm quite well. I've been enjoying making this movie with Lance Mungia for the past couple of years, and we're just about to release that.
I know. We're going to talk with Lance about that in about 30 minutes. I'm looking forward to that. And, of course, you've been pounding away at research. Are you still teaching remote viewing?
I'm still teaching occasionally, and it makes me happy that people are able to learn very quickly how to do remote viewing, how to quiet their minds, see what's going on in the distance, and even see what's going on in the future. It's not a secret. You don't have to eat porridge at the feet of your guru. Just half an hour with a group of people in the audience, and they do surprisingly well. I might be getting better at teaching over these years. People might just be more open to it than before.
Well, we all have this ability. Hey, Russell, a couple of weeks ago, I was interviewing a guest who was talking about Watergate, and he believes that Watergate, that wasn't the real reason they broke in, is because they wanted information on L. Ron Hubbard in the Church of Scientology, but they said he was always part of remote viewing. That's the first I ever heard of that. Is that true? Can you confirm that?
I can confirm that. I was never involved in Scientology, so what I'm telling you is my understanding through hearsay. But what I understand is that in the upper echelons of Scientology, they teach something like remote viewing to go from one grade to another grade, and people are able to learn remote viewing. And it's not a secret that our two very best remote viewers, Ingo Swann and Pat Price, were both high-level Scientologists, and they attributed their ability to innate ability, because they had psychic experiences as a child, but learning remote viewing is part of moving up in the various grades, the upper echelons of Scientology.
So it's probably possible.
Say again?
It's probably possible government wanted to find out what was going on, I guess.
That's certainly possible.
Wow.
I don't know what Scientology has been doing. There was a break-in by the IRS a couple of decades ago, and Scientology has had a lower profile since that break-in. You don't hear about them on the radio anymore.
No, we really don't. We really don't. Well, let's get into the NASA and the CIA and what's been going on there. Tell us a little bit about what we know about what happened a long time ago.
Well, a long time ago, I was a child magician. I was doing psychic stuff on the stage as a magician, and I began to have the experience of knowing what people in the audience were thinking, apart from the trick that I was doing. So as a young scientist, I made the move from standing on the stage fooling people to learning about the research that was going on. And I pursued that even while I was a physicist working on the earliest lasers. And then in 1972, I was invited to a conference on speculative technology where I got to meet Wernher von Braun and the chief administrator of NASA, and I took that as an opportunity to tell them about American and Soviet work in 1972, and made a pitch to help start a program at Stanford Research Institute. And that was successful. I had an ESP teaching machine, and Von Braun did very well with that. In fact, the four-choice trainer that I had in 1972 is now online. So I made an ESP game that all your listeners can use. If they have an Apple telephone or iPad, the game is called ESP Trainer.
Huh.
You can get it at no cost from the Apple Store. And this four-choice trainer will help you get in touch with the feeling you have when you're successfully using your remote viewing. So that's something new since the last time I talked with you. We use the four-choice ESP game for a NASA program at Stanford and published a paper and showed that people really can improve their scores and learn what it feels like to be psychic. And then a few years ago, I put that ESP game online. So if you go to the App Store, the Apple Store, you can get ESP Trainer as a four-choice application, has a pass button so that when you don't feel like you know the answer, you can pass. The machine will give you the correct answer and not charge you for a trial. And many, many people then write to me and tell me that they're getting good scores, and we'll chat about how they've learned to do that.
That's cool. That's pretty innovative indeed. How much did the CIA, Russell, spend at Stanford Research Institute over the decades?
Well, the most paranormal thing that I can tell you, George, about what we did is that we were in business for 20 years doing research for the government. We had about $1 million a year. The 20-year program was about $20 million. And the thing that's paranormal is that we had continuous support for the government for doing psychic stuff. Now, I've done other things for the government. I put lasers on airplanes to avoid crashes, and I developed lasers. And it's very hard to get a one-year follow-on if you're doing something scientifically.
That's right.
The idea that we had 20 years of follow-on is unprecedented.
Do you think presidents over that period knew what was going on with this program?
Well, yes. George Bush was briefed. George Bush the First was briefed when he was director of the CIA.
Uh-huh.
We know for a fact that our contract monitor, Ken Kress, briefed George Bush because he told us all about that. And we know that Jimmy Carter was involved because in the new book that he's published, he has a new biography that's just published last year about his life as he turned 90. And he has a chapter called Clairvoyance, where he talks about something that we did for him. Would you like me to read one paragraph?
Yeah, please. Go ahead. I'd love to hear that.
A direct quote from Jimmy Carter. And I won't do it with a Southern accent. I'll just do it with my... He says, "There was another experience I'd like to tell you about. I've never been able to explain it. One morning, I had a report from the CIA that a small twin-engine Russian plane went down somewhere in Zaire. It contained some important secret documents and a lot of hardware. It was a reconnaissance plane. We were searching for the crash site with satellite photography and other surreptitious high-flying airplane, and we couldn't find it. The satellite photography could not see through the jungle. So with some hesitancy, a CIA agent in California recommended the services of a clairvoyant woman and a man, I'll add, and we consulted them. The woman wrote down the latitude and longitude, and it proved to be accurate. And several days later, I'm adding my words now, several days later, we sent a helicopter there and found the airplane where it had crashed in a remote area. Without notifying the Zaire president, Mobutu, we were able to send in a small team and recover the documents and the hardware from the airplane. So that's a direct quote from Jimmy Carter about one of the many things that we did for the CIA during that period. Generally, they won't tell us about it, but Carter had been asked by a class at Emory College, did you ever see anything unexplainable when you were president? And this was his answer to that, that the psychics at SRI found a downed airplane that could not be found by satellite photography.
That's a great story. That's a great excerpt, too. That's fantastic. Did they ever have this urgency, and I mean the CIA, giving you guys assignments? Did you ever get the feeling that they were under pressure and needed something really fast?
Well, we were not 100% accurate, as no human intelligence is. So we would always be used together with something else. We were once targeted on a building in northern Russia, and Joe McMonagall was a psychic there, and he described construction of an enormous submarine, twice the size of any other submarine, and he drew pictures of it made out of two hulls side by side. So it was double wide and double long, and he had other special hardware for firing missiles while the thing was in transit. Nobody believed that. They thought that this was crazy. And he said, you'll see, 140 days from now, they're going to launch this thing. And within a couple of days of that period, it was launched, and we have satellite photography from that in more detail than we had from any other thing that we did. So finding the downed airplane and finding the Russian sub in very great detail were two of the operational things that we did toward the end of our program. When we were trying to get support from the CIA, we met John McMahon, who was the director of intelligence for the CIA, and he said, well, we'll support you if you can find something that's really of national security. And he said, I'll have a man give you coordinates. And we did one of our first coordinate remote viewings with Pat Price, where the CIA agent handed me a slip of paper with coordinates, and I went to our little screen covered room, isolation chamber with Price, and he said, well, I see these coordinates, I don't know what they are, but I'm lying here psychically on a building in the sunshine. I'm lying on my back, and as I'm lying here, there's a giant crane rolling back and forth over me. This is the biggest crane I've ever seen, and he said, I'm going to have to draw that. And he drew a detailed picture of what he described as a 8-wheel gantry crane, and we then brought that to the CIA, where they were staying in a motel, and they were astonished. They unrolled a big secret document that they had that showed this big crane right in the middle of the R&D facility in Semipalatinsk in Siberia. And they said, well, that's amazing. That's much better than we ever imagined. What are they doing in that building that you're rolling over? And he went back in a little shielded room with me.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, inside the building, everybody's in a white outfit, and they're trying to weld together orange peel slices, which he called gores, correctly. And they're trying to make a 60-foot diameter steel sphere, which he said is part of a nuclear program.
Wow.
You'll see these giant spheres that they're trying to weld together. And we got no confirmation because, of course, nobody knew it was in the building. And then following year, Price died. And then the year after that, Aviation Week published satellite photography of the building that was being taken apart. And they showed pictures of the 60-foot spheres made by welding together Gore's just as Price described at a time when no one knew anything about it.
Why did they disband the Russell? Why did they disband a successful program?
Well, they disbanded the program in 1995, and many people have opinions about why this happened. My opinion is that it caused embarrassment for people because they had to go to Congress, and Congress would tease the CIA for doing work with psychics. So although we had some congressional support, I think it became easier for the CIA to take the whole program in-house. See, right after we did this remarkable thing with the crane in Semipalatinsk, the CIA, this is my example of no good deed goes unpunished. As soon as we did this remarkable thing for the CIA, they did not support us. Au contraire, what they did is they hired away our amazing psychic, Pat Price, to work for the CIA on the East Coast. Now, the Stanford program continued because we got other support from DIA and from the Air Force and from NASA, but the CIA support of us, basically, we now know that the CIA was so impressed and frightened of having somebody who was essentially a omniscient psychic that was really too hot for us to handle at SRI. They were already worried that Price changed the minds of a lot of people.
He was even involved, as most of you were, on the Patty Hearst kidnapping case, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. But the CIA was worried about things that if you had somebody who is essentially omniscient, if you're Superman with psychic ability, then he can psychically read the launch codes that the president has to launch a nuclear weapon. So if Superman is psychic, it's nice to have him working for you, but if you're a spy, if you're a CIA spy, it really scares the hell out of you that this nice 65-year-old man can tell you anything, that there are no secrets anymore. So what we learned with Price is that a well-intentioned psychic who's given a task that has an answer, he in general can give you the answer. And that scared the hell out of the CIA. So they hired him from us, and he died a few months later, mysteriously. Because we don't... He had a heart condition, but he was fine. He was eating his French fries and Coke every day for lunch. It alarmed us. But then in August, right after the crane in Semipalatinsk, the CIA took him away from us, and a few months later, he was dead. It was the end of Pat Price. Now, I had trained two other CIA agents in remote viewing. And during the period that Price was at CIA, the agents together with Price were doing operational things. And my surmise, that I have no evidence for this, but it seems reasonable for me, to me, that part of the reason they ended the program is they didn't want these super psychics floating around out of their control.
Well, that's the big thing too, Russell, out of their control. Russell, we're going to bring in the director and producer in just a moment as we talk about the film Third Eye Spies, and then we're going to bring you back next hour for the phone calls. Well, next up, Lance Mungia, the producer-director of the Third Eye Spies movie, joins us. We're going to talk about that, and then later on, we'll take your phone calls about remote viewing on Coast to Coast AM. Back to Coast to Coast, Lance Mungia is with us. He is an award-winning producer-director of feature films and television, the co-creator of Waking Universe, which is a multimedia television film and merchandise company designed to foster a very conscious planet. His most recent project is the one we're going to talk about, Third Eye Spies, which is a feature documentary about the CIA-funded psychic spy program, spearheaded, of course, by Russell Targ at Stanford Research Institute during the Cold War. The documentary features CIA insiders, and Lance, welcome to the program. Great job.
Oh, thank you, George. Thank you so much for having us on the show. It's really great to be here.
How did you find Russell? How did Russell find you?
You know, I got a call out of the blue from Russell. Actually, a mutual friend had introduced him to some of my film work, and he calls me up and he says, "You know, hey, I saw a film you made, and you seem like you're a really talented guy, and I have a narrative script that I wrote about remote viewing, and I'd like you to read it." I knew who he was, you know, because I had read some of his stuff, and I knew about a little bit about the program, but not a lot. And I said, sure, I'd love to read your script, but you know, really, the real story here is your life. You know, is all of the cool stuff that you've done.
That's right.
And so he said, I didn't think about that. You know, like, why don't we get together and talk about it? And we did that. We spent, you know, several days. You know, he flew out to L.A. and it was really a real treat of my life to sit there with Russell and just talk to him about this stuff for 3 days. But even though I knew something about it for the first couple of days, I was kind of like, you know, is this really for real? I mean, really. Every story he would tell would become, you know, bigger and bigger and bigger, and you're kind of going, you know, wow, you know, this is like almost too much.
These are the men who stare at goats, right?
Right. But then after a couple of days, he was talking. I finally got to like the more detail oriented stuff. Like, you could go find all this stuff on Freedom of Information Act, and there were House Intelligence Committee meetings, hearings about it, and you know, they had senators and congressmen, and you know, presidents were briefed, et cetera, and that really convinced me that there was enough there to you know, to make a movie. And really, it wasn't just about Russell. It's many, many people that you know, were involved. And I think that it was the strength of all of them kind of coming together for the first time to tell their story is what makes it actually credible.
An amazing story indeed. Now, it's a feature documentary. So explain to us what that is.
Well, a feature documentary just basically means it's, you know, probably about 110 minutes, you know, right now. And, you know, we're still in the process of actually finishing the documentary. And, you know, we'll be looking for, you know, distributors and festivals in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's you know, really just a tapestry of, you know, the entire history of remote viewing. But more importantly, really what it means to us as human beings, that something like psychic abilities, in fact, are really real.
Is Russell in the documentary, or does somebody play him?
No, he is in the documentary. This is these are all the people that actually started the program. You know, him and Hal Putoff, his partner, and we've got the actual CIA, you know, contract monitors that began and oversaw the program for them, as well as some of the people like the head of the DIA program that it became later. The Army program that was out of Fort Meade. You know, for the first time, we interviewed probably 40 people for the documentary, and they were all the actual real people that were involved. What really instigated the documentary was the death of Ingo Swann.
Yes.
You know, he died, you know, a couple of years ago, and Russell realized that everybody was getting older, and you know, although it's nowhere near the same kind of story, it's kind of like something like the Holocaust. It's so unbelievable unless you gather all of the testimony before the people pass away, you just don't believe it.
Ingo was a dear friend of my late aunt, Shafika Karegula, who researched telepathy, Lance, wrote a book called Breakthrough to Creativity, and they were very, very close in terms of their work and their ethics to get to the bottom of this. And when I first told Ingo about that years ago, that she was my aunt, I mean, he almost like fell off his chair. It was something, but it's a close-knit community of these incredible people. Russell, as you know, is vision impaired, yet he still rides a motorcycle.
Yeah, that's actually such a great metaphor that, you know, he's a legally blind motorcycle riding physicist. We actually have that line in the film. You know, and I have some footage of him from an actual Russian documentary that they made on him, that, you know, with him on a motorcycle, which is great.
As you were putting the feature documentary together, did you come across anything personally that just knocked you off your chair?
You know, what's knocked me off my chair the most is how normal everybody is. You think about psychic stuff, and you think it's a guy in a turban with a crystal ball or something, you know, and everybody is just incredibly nice and incredibly normal, you know, and you realize that these are people who have seen something in their lives that is so spectacular as scientists, really, and as very serious military people. And you know, we interviewed a Nobel Prize winner in the film. Brian Josephson is in the film, who's out of Cambridge. You know, we've interviewed, Edgar Mitchell is one of his last interviews, you know, the Apollo astronaut.
Oh, loved him.
You know, all of these people have treated this as you should treat science, which is something maybe that you don't fully understand at first, but something that there's evidence to explore, you know, but really what the two things that blew me away the most actually were, one was that there were so many credible people involved, and in fact that so many credible people that are involved that don't want to talk about it because of the stigma involved in studying psychic research. And then secondly, how many normal, regular people are doing it today? You know, there's IRVA, the International Remote Viewers Association, mm-hmm. which I think I've seen you speak at, actually. I was there when...
Yeah, were you there? Okay.
Yeah, we actually filmed the panel, I think you did there a couple of years ago.
Okay, great.
You know, that blew me away because you had a room full of, what, 200-300 people?
Yeah.
And Russell on stage, and all he says is, close your eyes and tell me what the unexpected images are coming to your mind. Where is the target? You know, like, where is the subject at? Just describe the unexpected things that you see. I was walking around the room with a handheld camera. And
that was you.
That was me. Yeah, probably in everybody's way. And that was really the first time that I had actually seen normal people do remote viewings. I would say probably 80% of the audience got it correct. They nailed it.
You know, isn't it amazing that the government did not continue a very successful program? I know some think it's still going on.
You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't have the smoking gun, you know, but as an investigative, you know, documentarian, you know, I'm naturally very curious. And you know, if they're not doing it today, they are way out of touch.
They're missing the boat. Yeah, absolutely. Here's my take, though, on this. Mm-hmm. If they were doing it today, you would think they would use some of these amazing remote viewers in the program unless they've pulled the wool over our eyes. I mean, I believe Russell. When Russell tells me, no, the government's not doing it, I'm not involved in it. Mm-hmm. If they were doing it, we would be involved. Mm-hmm. Do they have a new crop of remote viewers?
I have heard arguments like, well, I mean, you know, one of the interviews we did was with Joe McMonagle, who, mm-hmm. You know, Joe McMonagle was in the Army, decorated military veteran, Vietnam vet, you know, looks like a grizzly bear. I mean, this guy is somebody you don't want to meet in a dark alley.
Yeah, Rasputin or something like that.
Really. But he is convinced that they're not doing it. You know, even though he was a, you know, one of the military's most highly successful remote viewers, you know, he got the Legion of Merit Award, which is the highest intelligence, you know, non-combatant award you can get in the Army, for remote viewing specifically, you know, he says that, you know, there was so much political goodwill that needed to be gathered in Congress to support the program over so many years. And when Russell says, oh, it cost $20 million for the program, all he's talking about is the SRI portion,
right.
The Stanford Research Institute. The Army portion is a whole other portion. And the Air Force had an informal program. And you know, the CIA was tinkering with it. And there were probably all kinds of little things, you know, everywhere with budgets that are much bigger. $20 million is nothing. The real thing is that it doesn't take a lot of money to do remote viewing. It takes a lot of money to figure out how it's done.
Right.
Which is why it's not considered, mainstream. But it's not hard to do it. And so my take on it is that the more public figures are public. You know, like Dale Graff, the head of the DIA program, I don't know if you've ever interviewed him, he said to me that, you know, the Army program became an embarrassment because you had guys getting out of the Army that were just normal Army guys that did remote viewing, and then they wanted to talk about it. And his superiors told him, Dale Graff, that, you know, better to let them go and talk about it and say nothing and let them appear crazy than to penalize them and then just, and then, you know, prove the fact that the program existed.
Yeah, no, exactly.
So I think that, you know, peer pressure, silence in general, you know, the fact that something sounds crazy is good enough to kind of suppress what's out there.
Take us, Lance, through the documentary and weave us through how you presented it.
Well, you know, it's the most famous remote viewer, probably, well, maybe Ingo Swann, but let's say the most more powerful remote viewer, I guess, that they had working at SRI would have been Pat Price.
Mm-hmm, right.
And we start actually with a trip to Pat Price's cemetery. You know, he's buried in North Hollywood. He died in the mid-1970s, and his death was considered mysterious. You know, he did have a heart condition. You know, it's not known exactly how he died, but people have different theories. But, you know, we start with a trip to the cemetery and the fact that he has an unmarked grave. You know, and here's a guy who literally the first thing he ever did at SRI was look into the most secret vault in an NSA site and read code words and, you know, special access program classified. The names were classified.
And he got it right.
He got them right.
Yeah.
He got them right. And that is documented, you know. So what do you do with a guy like that? You know, that's you know, I spoke with one of the contract monitors from the CIA who is a medical doctor. And he, you know, believes that this talent is like a bell curve. And you need the guys that have 100% accuracy 100% of the time, you know, and he didn't believe that the military or others were going to be able to hit that level of accuracy all the time. But Pat Price was that accurate, you know, according to.
Yeah, he was a gem.
Yeah. And so eventually what we found in the documentary is that Pat was basically used to cancel the SRI program. You know, the CIA didn't trust SRI. And so they used him to basically recruit him into the CIA directly, and he did work for them directly, you know. And then he died, you know. So it's that is one thread, but the other thread is Russell's journey. You know, he's in his older years, still very vibrant, but you know, a lot of the film is about mortality, you know, and really immortality as well, because it's about discovering who we are as human beings, not just in our brains and in our flesh and blood, but the fact that, you know, there's a lot more than meets the eye when it comes to consciousness.
Well, with Lance Mungia, he's the producer-director of Third Eye Spies. Were you or are you blown away by the concept of remote viewing?
It's completely, completely life-changing for me. You know, I'm not a scientist. I'm not a you know, conspiracy guy that spends his life, you know, just doing research. You know, I'm a filmmaker, and this subject came to redefine who I am as a human being. You know, period. Like, you know, me meeting Russell and going through this process and meeting all of these other people, it forces you to look at the world in a new way, and ultimately that is what the documentary is about changing the paradigm of how we see the world. What happens when you realize there really are no secrets? What happens when you realize that you're connected in a fundamental way to the planet and everyone else around you through your consciousness? You know, and that you can see outside of space and time. And you know, it truly is shaking. You know, and you really need a different paradigm, you know, to fill your brain with, because it pretty much empties it of everything you thought you knew.
Isn't it amazing at how easy it is for people to learn how to do it?
it is incredibly amazing. And in fact, people usually do the best the first time they do it. You know, it's a you know, what it really came down to, I think, and you know, we go through in the documentary the early SRI experiments. We have some archival footage with Ingo and with Hala Hamid and some of the early remote viewers that they had at SRI. And the best remote viewer they had, besides Pat, really statistically the best, was Hala Hamid. She was a control. You know, she was brought in because the CIA wanted to see somebody who wasn't psychic.
Mm-hmm.
And she got better results than anybody. You know, and it's you can't predict who is a good remote viewer.
Were you able to get Ingo on video before he died?
No. We have archival footage of him. It's a regret that I wasn't able to interview him. There is some good archival footage of him. You know, he's the father of remote viewing. I mean, he was the guy who was the guy.
A
professional psychic, and they were doing Gonstelled experiments, you know, with the cards and the wavy lines and stuff at SRI with some psychics. And Ingo said, why are you making me look inside an envelope? I can look anywhere in the world. Just tell me, you know, give me something more interesting to do. And they didn't believe him, you know. And then pretty soon he was looking via coordinates anywhere on the planet. You know, he was looking at, you know, and when the CIA heard that, they went, what? You know, you can look anywhere on the planet with coordinates, just, you know, but they didn't believe it until they really saw it firsthand. You know, they thought it was just propaganda coming out of the Soviet Union because the Soviet Union was using it.
His book, Penetration, which talks about things he saw on the far side of the moon, are absolutely riveting.
Yes, and I've read that. You know, I've read that, and Ingo had a flair about him. You know, he was a storyteller. I mean, he really, you know, can tell a great story, and it's cinematically done. And that opens up a whole other question, because in that book he's remote viewing the moon. You know, he's remote viewing UFOs. You know, we don't get into the phenomenon. Like Russell has a saying, which is one impossible thing at a time. and so, you know, I'm perfectly content in the documentary to show the world that they're psychic.
The wisdom of our elders, huh?
right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, that's Russell. You know, I'm.
And in terms of the movie, what will the venue be? Will it be on DVD? Is it going to be on the big screen? What's your wish list here?
Well, my wish list is that we get a theatrical release with it, number one. I mean, it doesn't have a distributor yet. I mean, that's something we'll be working on in the fall. You know, I'm mainly, you know, completing the film right now. You know, I'd love to submit it to Sundance in the fall and some other festivals. And, you know, who knows, maybe it could wind up in a theater near you.
Submit it to my friend Hank Cohen, former president of MGM Television, who heads up Trifecta Entertainment now in L.A. He might be very interested in that, Lance.
I will do that. I'll tell him you told me to call.
Yep, Hank Cohen. We're going to come back and keep you, Lance, for phone calls along with Russell next on Coast to Coast AM.